Hello and welcome to The Crumb, a podcast from Bake From Scratch magazine. We're here to talk baking in all forms, the people, the culture, and the baked goods that make us run to preheat our oven. Hello and welcome back to The Crumb.
Hello, Kyle Grace.
Hey, Brian. So I know it's been a busy, busy week, but what did you bake this weekend?
Oh my gosh, let me tell you. So we included in our tropical-themed issue an entire feature on vanilla. And I know that might shock you to hear vanilla, but it is a produce grown in the tropics.
Yeah, it's an orchid, actually.
It is an orchid grown in the tropics. So we wanted to make sure vanilla got center stage. And personally, like, I am drawn to anything with a very strong vanilla flavor. I really love it. I always add a little more extract or paste to my baking than any recipe calls for, just to up the vanilla game. So I made our double vanilla cream cheese bread. And not only is it delicious, it is so mesmerizing with the braided bread over the vanilla cream cheese filling. I even took it one step further and I added blueberry preserves.
You've got to do it. It's in, you know, it's that time of year. You got to have the fruit.
I know. I've been on a blueberry kick lately. Like, I'm stirring it into everything I can, and finding a way to get this jam added just upped the game. You could add any jam or a fruit paste of any kind to this, and the vanilla and the fruit, it's going to play so beautifully together. I started slicing it and I was taking little bites and just, oh, this is so good. And the next thing I know, I was eating entire pieces, which, as one should when it's this good, you know, I couldn't stop myself. So my brother-in-law was at our condo and I packed it quickly for him at the end of dinner and said, take it, share it with your friends. I've got to get this out of the kitchen because I was on to my next bake, but we don't need to keep talking about what I baked. It's time to hear what you baked.
So we'll be talking with our future guests about what is the ideal kitchen. But I recently baked in the Purgatory kitchen. It was about the smallest I've had to deal with in a long time. And I wasn't familiar with the oven. I didn't have my stand mixer. What am I going to do? Well, I turned to our blondies. We have an entire blondie feature in our tropical issue. And it is like 3 main recipes, 9 ways. It's a dream. And the best part about these blondies is it's all stir together. You melt that butter down, actually turn it into browned butter, and it makes it so nutty and delicious. And I took that base recipe and I used the Lamington version, which has sweetened condensed milk poured over the top and baked with extra chocolate. And then it's also got coconut. I was cooking for a person who didn't want a coconut, but it worked out anyways. It's one of those things where that sweetened condensed milk sinks into it. It's gooey, it's tender, and I just have to say, like, you could bake that anywhere.
It is so awesome to have stir together recipes. I think we forget that sometimes you just need to melt the butter and stir something together in a bowl and have a delicious baked good in a fairly short amount of time. And then adding sweetened condensed milk, I'm sorry, that just ups the game. And I love sweetened condensed milk. To be honest, I can put my finger in some straight from the can.
Well,
and
you
eat
know,
it.
I bathe in it, so.
Oh, good, good. I think you are on the right track with that. So I can't wait to see what other blondies you make, because with those 3 base recipes, it's kind of like one of those, the possibilities are endless. So I'm gonna get some in my kitchen soon, too.
So this is what we baked. Who are we going to be talking to?
Okay. I am so excited. Today, we are chatting with David Leibovitz. He is one of the original baking bloggers. But more than that, let's talk a little bit about how he came to be such an icon. After 13 years of working at Chez Panisse as a pastry chef, he released his first cookbook, Room for Dessert, and launched the groundbreaking blog, davidleibovitz.com. This was way back in 1999.
A low-key 20 years ago when I was 5.
Oh my gosh. I was graduating from high school in 99. All right, so beyond blogging, David is a celebrated author with 2 memoirs about his life as an expat in Paris and 6 cookbooks covering his interest from chocolate to ice cream.
In fact, his cookbook, The Perfect Scoop, has the enviable title as the all-time best-selling ice cream cookbook in the world. Lucky for us, David still blogs and bakes with no sign of slowing down. Here's our chat with David. Hello, David, and welcome to The Crumb.
Hi there. How you doing?
We're doing good.
We are so happy you've joined us. I have been busy telling everyone about our time in Paris and how fortunate I was to be in your apartment and hang out with you behind the scenes when we were creating our French issue of Bake from Scratch. But to kick things off, instead of me bragging about being in your kitchen and telling everyone about what it looks like, why don't you do us the honor of talking about your Paris kitchen and what sets it apart from all the other kitchens in Paris?
Well, it was interesting because unlike a lot of people, I cook at home, and that's sort of where I work as well, my kitchen. So a lot of people in Paris, including my partner, didn't understand when I bought this big space. It was an old metal shop. I was like, I want to turn it into a big kitchen and live in the kitchen and cook in the kitchen, eat in the kitchen, and knock down the walls. And that's not very French. The French like to have, they like to define things. So you have a living room, you have a dining room, which is for dining, and you have a kitchen, which is for cooking. And often it has a door on it. So I was sort of doing what they call a cuisine américaine or American kitchen, which is basically a big open space with a counter. And when I was renovating it, neighbors were walking by and sticking their head in the door and saying, are you opening a restaurant here? What's going on? And I joked with a few of them. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to open a bakery. And they're like, oh, no, it's not possible. You know, you don't have the right to do that. Like, I'm just kidding, you know. So you saw my kitchen is very big and different than everybody else's kitchen in Paris.
It is huge. I mean, I even look at it as a dream kitchen for anyone that has an American kitchen, but it also breaks some of the standards and just the size of the island space and the stools mm-hmm. that surround and just how we all congregate. I think foodies, we naturally find ourselves gravitating to a kitchen, but then we also socialize mm-hmm. in the kitchen, and your apartment is perfect for that. So,
well, it's also nice to have a space where some, you know, you have guests over and you're not running into the kitchen checking on things.
I don't like to say,
excuse me, I'll be back in 5 minutes.
I do the same thing. I perch on the edge of my kitchen island with my glass of wine, and then I turn and take care of the food that's cooking, but I'm still a part of the social the social engagement. So I totally see how you can have some epic parties and entertain in your kitchen.
Yeah, well, one thing, like I've sort of realized, like, I'm not a good entertainer because I don't do all the rules. I don't, you know, have everything laid out when everybody arrives, or I try to. And I just don't have any, you know, people always say, what are rules for entertaining? I'm like, get as much done as you can in advance. Because I was a line cook for most of my life. So I'm used to being, you know, standing over the stove and not interacting with people. So I have a little difficulty with the multitasking stuff. So fortunately, my partner's very gregarious and he's very good at chatting and talking to people. So
that's a perfect yin and yang.
Yeah. So David, tapping into your experience in Paris, you offer a lot of guidance to blog readers about how to navigate mm-hmm. French produce markets and brocantes, which are their flea markets. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some of your top tips for travelers looking to pick up some produce or vintage bakeware at these markets?
Mm-hmm. Well, France has a really great network of markets everywhere. I mean, Paris, there's 100 markets that take place every day except for Monday. And, you know, that's where people shop before they had grocery stores. They shopped at the market. So they're fun places to shop. But, you know, like anywhere, you know, like if you're shopping for a pair of pants, you don't just walk in the store and buy the first pair you see. You look around. So I always look around, look at the apples, look at the pears, look at the rhubarb, whatever. See who has the best at a decent price and so forth. You don't do haggling at the market, but you do. Everything in France is negotiated, you know, whether it's getting a new key made or buying apples. So, you know, because the French idea of service is different than ours in the United States. So, you know, they're not servants. They're sort of there to help you. So you can't demand things, but you can be exigeant, which is a great word, which means in English discerning. And I told a French friend, I was like, well, it means discriminating. He goes, no, it's not discrimination. And I said, well, you know, it just means that you have to sort of show that you appreciate, like you know pears or you know peaches and you want the good ones.
Yeah,
and they will help you.
They have a personal stake in what they're selling, and they don't, you know, it's not just a job, it's a passion.
Yeah. I mean, they're happy to say no as well. If you know, it's like, oh, in America, we're just taught to say yes no matter what.
Right.
France is a great place to buy vintage cookware and bakeware, especially if you get out of Paris, because people are cleaning out their houses. And a lot of young people don't cook or bake, or they don't care about that stuff. They want like silicone molds. So you can find really amazing things like Le Creuset cookware. I love going through boxes of stuff at flea markets. Everything's like 10 cents. And I find spatulas, great wooden spoons, everything. I mean, I have the kitchen to prove it. All my cabinets are packed with stuff.
Well, I love following you on Instagram every day, but especially when you do leave Paris and go out into some of the villages or some of the areas where the brocantes are just piled full with things, and you gravitate. I've watched your shopping habits and the Olay bowls and the vintage Pyrex or things, you know, mid-century in their colorway and style. And I love following along, and you've probably seen plenty of messages from me saying, oh, I want that. I love that.
I think you even were the recipient of something you liked. So
yeah,
it wasn't at a flea market.
No, but David did send this amazing culinary keychain to me that I saw he posted on Instagram. I said, oh my God, I love it. And he said, do you want one? I really do. I wouldn't mind getting one for you. I said, oh my God, I would love it. And I am so happy that you did. Thank you for getting it over to me here in the States.
Well, normally I would have ignored that kind of request, or I would have just went, ha ha. But as a baker, I knew that, like, it was, you know, the key ring had like a mini whisk, a mini spatula, and a couple mini metal kitchen baking tools, and I thought, and from one baker to another, I had to send it.
Yeah,
it
well, thank you.
It wasn't an option.
Yeah. So, speaking of Paris and your time, you know, living there since the early 2000s, obviously you were a foodie and a baker when you arrived, but your observations of the Paris pastry and baking scene. Has it changed much since you moved? What is the, you know, what stays the same? Give us a little sense of the movement in artisan baking and pastry in Paris.
Well, Paris had a big shakeup in the pastry department around the time I arrived, which was approximately 20 years ago, when Pierre Hermé sort of exploded on the scene. And, you know, two things he did were make people notice pastry chefs and bakers, because he became famous worldwide. And the second thing was he broke a lot of rules. He wasn't doing traditional pastries. He was using techniques that were traditional, but creating these flavors that were just completely different and unique to him. And other people started following in his footsteps. They start, you know, chocolatiers like Patrick Roger started adding lemongrass to his chocolates and things like that, or sesame seeds or oatmeal even. And it was exciting. And I was so excited. It was a great time to be in Paris for pastry. Lots of little shops were opening up. And that's when my blog sort of took off, because nobody was writing about these people, because they didn't, I mean, they're writing about Pierre Hermé, but these people that had one little store, no one had heard of. And I would go in there and say, can I write about you on my blog? And they were like, what's a blog? You know, this isn't 2003, 2004. So that's been really exciting. And the new wave of bakers, which happened about 3 or 4 years ago, are young people. And this sounds funny for people to hear this, but a lot of them were influenced by what's happening in the US, Australia, England. Young bakers are discovering ancient grains, like using spelt, getting flour from a local mill rather than just buying it from the distributor. And that just hit Paris recently, and it's very exciting because they're discovering, they're using their techniques that they know really well, but they have this new palette of ingredients to incorporate. And
I love
there's a baker near me that puts curry in their baguettes, and they're really good. They're kind of spicy.
God, that sounds amazing. I would love that.
I'm not sending you one.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll come to Paris and meet you for one next time. That's the deal.
Okay.
So after all of these years, like eating and exploring in Paris and seeing these amazing new places pop up and bring their, you know, spin on things, what's some of the best baking advice you've gathered, or, you know, just something that's inspired you that's completely changed the way you bake?
Well, it's interesting because I was just telling somebody recently that I'm not a technique-driven baker. I worked at Chez Panisse in Berkeley for most of my baking career, and everything we did was led by flavor of the ingredients. Like, we'd start with an ingredient like fraise des bois or raspberries that a neighbor had, or Meyer lemons because we were in California, and then do something with them, but not obliterate them. You know, we wouldn't do like 12-layer cakes, you know, with these beautiful fraise des bois, and I have nothing against 12-layer cakes, but it wasn't the best way to present them. So I always tell people, like, you know, to start with a good ingredient. You know, everything starts with the market for me. I go to the market, I smell the peaches, I pick each one up. And, you know, being France, I know which vendors let you touch things and which don't. We should backtrack a little bit there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Market's like, don't touch anything unless you see other people doing it. And if you, when in doubt, ask. Because people have gotten reprimanded, including myself. And it's you know, well, it's just a cultural.
Yeah, that's perfect for summertime because, you know, we're all going to markets right now. I know you've got access to the French produce soon. But here, you know, it's important to, if you walk by and you can smell the strawberries, you should stop and check out those strawberries and do something with it.
And we have really, or I should say you or all of us, there's really good produce in America. I can't tell you how many people leave comments on social media or on my blog saying, oh, I wish we got those kind of, you know, good strawberries here. I wish we could get artisan bread. And I look and they're writing from like Los Angeles, you know, and I'm like, you have amazing markets, you know, and you have
it's
really
California,
great
you know, it's
yeah.
You can't get better
but
than
America,
that.
Even small cities, you know, I went to Atlanta a few years ago and, you know, someone said to me before I went, like, okay, what you want to do is get in and get out as soon as you can. I was like, okay, okay. And then I went out to eat and the restaurants were spectacular.
Yeah.
And not even good, I mean, saying really good. So, you know, it's everywhere is now a culinary destination in America because you have young people, you have a generation that's interested in baking and cooking. And making cocktails.
Oh, absolutely. I'm here for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important, to, you know, people are learning to eat with the seasons again. And I think I think one reason American produce or people generalize it to say, oh, I wish we had that amazing produce here, is we're so accustomed to strawberries being in the grocery store year round or blueberries in the grocery store year round. And waiting until they're fresh, local, and the flavor difference will teach you that the seasons bring the flavors you should be cooking and baking with. And I think that you lead with that. I think going to the market and letting it tell you what you're going to do is a really great starting point.
Yeah. And I strongly agree with what you just said. I think we've gotten used to in the US, like raspberries in January, and we get used to that. It's like, oh, well, these, you know, they're going to last 2 weeks. They're bred to last a long time. But then you go to the market, the farmer's market, and you eat a basket of raspberries, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, what a difference.
Yes. The flavor teaches you.
Yeah. And some of it's economics, too. You know, a lot of people, you go to the market, and a basket of raspberries might be $5 versus the $3 ones at the supermarket. But anybody who's ever picked a basket of raspberries, like, would not sell it for less than $5.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So
I would eat them all.
Speaking of summertime and the warm weather and, you know, everyone's craving for ice cream returns, not that I don't have it year round, but let's talk about The Perfect Scoop. You released the book in its first iteration in 2007 and then released an updated and revamped edition in 2018. And I want to know why you retackled the subject matter. What major differences will we see in the second release that maybe you reevaluated something or mm-hmm. or kind of just give us a little perspective on two releases of an amazing book, by the way. But I want to know what changed from first version to the 2018 version.
Well, when I first wrote the book, nobody wanted to publish it. Or when I wanted to write the book, I should say, I couldn't find a publisher. And one actually told me it was because I wasn't on TV. I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So I managed to find a publisher. I got the world's lowest advance. But I was so passionate about the subject. I was like, I want to write this book on ice cream, like that covers everything. That covers basics, that covers the mix-ins, the swirls. And it was really fun to write. And when it came out, it was a hit, you know. And I always tell people who want to write a book, I'm like, well, if you get rejected, just, you know, find someone that likes the idea. So it sort of took on a life of its own. And there wasn't really a book like that. And over the years, I would go to like these new ice cream shops that were opening up in cities everywhere. And the owners would come running out and going, oh, my God, we love your book. We used it to start our business and you really influence us. And it was really gratifying. And the book became what my publisher at one point said was the number one selling ice cream book in the world. A few years ago, the publisher, who's a friend of mine, Aaron Wenner, we were having dinner and he goes, why don't we do a new edition? He's like, because the old one, you know, could use to be refreshed. And one thing, when you write a book, you don't really get a chance to change anything. And, you know, things change the way you bake things. Like Julia Child, the way she cooked in the 50s, she probably would make changes now. She would change things, make things faster, incorporate new ingredients, new techniques. And that's what I wanted to do. The other thing that I got to do was incorporate this new sort of groundswell of adding different things to ice cream, like caramel corn, doing frozen cocktails. And so I took out some of the recipes that were that weren't as popular as the other ones, that were popular in 2007, and replaced them with things like caramel corn ice cream and so forth, and toasted marshmallows, you know, adding those to the mix. And we reshot the book, and I was so happy. Because it was like all of a sudden it was like the book had been refreshed and I got to, you know, we don't have a chance in life to often go back and change things that we did wrong. And I didn't do anything wrong, but we didn't have, you know, you don't often have a chance to go back.
Yeah. And freshen it up.
Yeah. Freshen stuff up. Like, you know, like those photos we look at ourselves 20 years ago. You guys are chuckling like, oh, yeah, she saw those pictures.
Well, no, I feel the same way being, you know, a magazine and book publisher, you know, mm-hmm. ourselves. Like after something goes to press, I always have five thoughts of like, you know, here's a different way we could have approached this. And I do mm-hmm. love when we get the chance to go back and either just re-photograph or update some of the methods yep. or the, you know, the flavor profiles that have become mm-hmm. more relevant today and change things up. So I totally understand where you're coming from. And you yeah. you had me at adding caramel corn to ice cream.
Well, and one of my favorite things to do is try and tempt my mom, who is a savory eater. She does not. Mm-hmm. She told me when I was reading about your cookbook that she was like, well, I'm not going to eat any ice cream. And then I started reading some of the recipes to her. And I think it was the Roquefort honey ice cream that finally got her. And that's what made her cave in. So,
well, so it's funny because I once was doing a baking demo and I said, well, I don't really like sweets. And people were laughing. I was like, what? Well, what did I say? And everyone's like, well, you're a baker. I said, well, I like, you know, I use sugar, but I like things like dark chocolate. I like things yeah. like coffee. I like raspberries. You know, I like Roquefort. So, it's you know, I always keep things on that side of not yeah. too sweet.
It's the complex. You know, sweet seems not complex, and you're looking for the complex flavor notes.
Yeah, like even caramel, you know, we're just discussing caramel corn, and now I want some. But caramel, you know, you cook it to a certain point, and it's just slightly burnt.
Yeah.
And it gives it a little bit of edge. So,
you know, now that you are out in New York and about and you've been traveling to these amazing places like Atlanta, you know, who is currently inspiring you in the baking world? You know, any amazing up and comers that are getting you excited?
Well, I was in San Francisco recently and I went to this new bakery or new to me. It was called Jane the Bakery.
Oh, we love Jane. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you guys heard it. Okay. Yeah. It was really like special. And I had, the name was kind of funny, but I bought a loaf of their bread at Byright, and it was called Ancient Grains. And this loaf was like crusted with these ancient grains. And I took a bite. I was like, oh, okay, this is amazing, this bread. And I went there and, you know, I think his name is Jorgen Carlson or Jorgen, and Alexander, who does the baking. They're both super talented and everything was excellent. I also love Belinda Leong at B Patisserie in San Francisco. I mean, she's sort of a classical French baker, but she's putting, you know, her Asian American touches on things like black sesame seed, Queen Yaman, the buttery pastry from Brittany, doing, you know, almond cookies that are like those crunchy ones you get in Chinatown, but she's using really good ingredients, but also making typical French pastries and breads too that are excellent.
You just named my two favorite bakeries in San Francisco, and we were just in both of those bakeries. We did a San Francisco bread baking retreat, and the first day we took our group to four bakeries in San Francisco just so we could get out and about and engage with some of the really amazing bakers, and we went to both of those bakeries. They rolled out the red carpet. We got to, Belinda even made a special batch of the black sesame Queen Amon for us. So we felt super privileged
to. I hate you. She doesn't do that for me.
Well, maybe when she hears this interview, she'll have a batch for you next time you're there.
Wow. One thing she does that's amazing that you don't know, it's not readily apparent, is the granola. And I was tasting, I was like, whatever's in here is amazing. And she goes, oh, it's just red wheat. I'm like, there's something else. And she's like, no, it's the wheat. And that's, I always bring three bags of granola back with me to Paris because I love it so much. And I hide it so I don't have to share.
No, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because we just interviewed her for something coming up. And she told us, she said it was purple wheat, actually, that was in, it's special, comes from Canada. And one of her team went out and was looking for new grains and new flavors. And they found this purple wheat. And she says that's what adds the complexity to her granola, which she's very proud of.
Well, now I'm going to have to get a bag next time I'm out there.
Well, it's really good. And she works with a guy who's a bread maker. And he's a bread baker, bread maker. And he's also an expert on grains. And he's French. Another bakery that's excellent that sort of comes out of left field is Supermoon Bakehouse in New York. And you probably know Rye Stevens as well. And he's a really great young man from Australia, and he does these croissants that sound weird, like one of them stuffed with cream cheese and smoked salmon, like an everything bagel, and all his croissants are amazing.
I could not agree more. I love that you're hitting all these hot spots when you're in the States.
Oh, well, we need to maybe do a U.S. bakery crawl. We have to get an airline to sponsor us, and then we can go everywhere.
I will call deal on that, and we'll get started on that. I think we could pack the plane with a bakery crawl across the country with you.
Yeah, you could even brand it, have the plane, you know, baked can be on the side of the plane.
We're on to something here, David. I like this. All right. So now Kyle Grace is going to take you through our lightning round. These are questions that we've come up with. So you give us quick answers and just so we can pick your brain about a few more things before we have to end our conversation. All right, Kyle Grace, take it away.
Okay. All right. French produce you can't live without.
I would say Renclod plums, which are little green plums that are probably the best fruits you'll ever put in your mouth.
Ooh.
Nice.
Actually, I'll skip the probably and say they are definitely the best.
He has revised it to state the best. Yep. I love it.
All right, hopping back to America. Favorite American food to get when you come back stateside?
Well, if I'm in New York, it's pepperoni pizza. Big fan of Prince Street Pizza, little cups of, they call them grease cups, but they have the best pepperoni pizza ever. And if I'm in San Francisco, I get a Mission Burrito.
Oh, good.
Which are now too big for me to eat, but now that I'm French. there's a great burrito place called El Castillito, and they don't get any publicity, but that's the best.
All right, adding that to my list.
Yeah.
Baking. I'm giving up all my secrets.
Yeah, I know. I love this.
Baking tool you adore most?
I would say the spoon spatulas made by Le Creuset I first discovered them when they started doing silicone spatulas, and they have this great curve. They're not flat, but they're not too curved. So they hold batters. They're great for mixing, stirring, lifting, folding. They recently changed the shape, and I'm very glad when I went to the factory a few years ago, I bought a huge bag of them.
Oh, you have the old shape.
Well, you have the original one. And I was giving them out to friends as gifts, and I stopped. So, Brian, you're not gonna
another thing I cannot ask for. I get it.
All right. Desert Island ice cream, assuming, of course, that you have a magic freezer, too.
I would say I love my chocolate sorbet. It's from the Perfect Scoop. There's no dairy in it. I would hate to give up chocolate. But since I'd be wearing a swimsuit or whatever, nothing, I guess, I don't know. There's no eggs or cream, so I wouldn't have to worry about getting like a little island belly.
Yeah, smart.
Also, I love it. He's watching his figure even on that deserted island.
Well, you know, you never know who's going to rescue you, and you want to look good when they, you know, they pick you up with the news cameras.
That's right. That's right.
But it goes well with rum. As well, which I might be making as well.
Absolutely.
We'll allow some rum in there. Yeah.
Is it a dessert island or a desert island?
Desert island. One S, I'm afraid.
I think you're going to turn it into a dessert island. I think we're figuring out what you'd be doing. And the rum, of course. We'd have to have cocktails.
Maybe we could have a reality show called Dessert Island where people, you know, we meet up and, well, we'll let the producers decide.
There you
what
go. Yeah. Want. Yeah. Gosh, we've created an airline today and now a television show. I love what we're doing here.
Yeah, you've already got your Christmas gift list planned.
Yeah,
that's right.
So I'm waiting for that to arrive by email.
Yeah. All right. Last meal in Paris ever. What do you get and where do you order it from?
I would say the tasting menu at Le Rigmarole. And that sounds like a funny place to have a last meal. But I love Chef Robert Compagnon, who's half American, half French, and his wife, who's American, Taiwanese. And they just do a tasting menu. And normally I don't like tasting menus, but you just let them do what they do. And they send you out these grilled foods, little bites of things. And it's always like an adventure. They're super nice people. It's really fun and delicious. And so that would probably be my last meal in Paris.
I like it. You don't even know what you'd be eating and you've chosen that for your, I love it. So another place to add to my Paris list.
Yeah.
Well, my last meal ever would be fried chicken. And I don't know if I could get fried chicken in Paris. So
no, you'd have to hop stateside for that last meal.
Yeah.
You have to come visit us here in Alabama. We've got some fried chicken.
We do.
I'd have to do that before my island belly.
Yeah, yeah. It all have to be coordinated the way the last meals and then, of course, the island, the chocolate sorbet. So I love the menu that's come of your final days and being lost on an island. We know where to find you.
I know. Someone needs to figure out a way to make fried chicken good. Imagine if it was really good for you. It was like kale. You could just eat fried chicken every day.
Oh, but we're getting into Soylent Green territory. I'm a little worried about that.
Well, maybe our body chemistries at some point will change and we'll evolve so we can eat.
That's
fried
an evolution
chicken.
I can get behind.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement for that. Well, David, thank you so much for joining us today and chatting. I can't wait to see you the next time I'm in Paris and for us to plan our next magazine feature with you. You're a big friend of ours here at Bake From Scratch, and being a part of the Crom is an honor to have spent time chatting today and for all of our listeners to learn a little bit more about you, your life in Paris, and your amazing career that is not just in the food scene, but guiding us to all things about your day-to-day life in France. So it's been so fun, and I can't wait for the next time we get to chat.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was great to chat with you both, and I loved your questions, and we have a big list of things to tackle.
We do, and now I'm going to have to amend that list I send you for the items I need. You've definitely added things to it.
Okay, great. Well, it was nice to chat with you.
You too. Have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. David Leibovitz, the man, the legend, the baker.
Man, and I'm so proud to call him a friend, too. Absolutely loved meeting him when we were in Paris producing the French issue, and just his warmth and excitement for baking and then showing us around his neighborhood in Paris. He's just a really great guy, and I'm so happy he's a part of our baking community, and I'm even more excited that he agreed to come on the Crumb with us. Yeah. So he is someone that I can't wait to continue following his journey and, you know, absolutely hanging on for every book he releases and the amazing content that he has put into our baking world. I can't say enough about what a great conversation we had with David.
So has he got you inspired and excited about baking anything this upcoming weekend?
Oh, yes. So, you know, with our American Independence Day, 4th of July coming up, I'm going to bake our June Bundt of the Month Club recipe that we actually included sorbet in the cake. So, no, it is not baked in the oven with sorbet. Once it comes from the oven and cools completely, you hollow out I guess you could call it a channel around the base of the bundt cake, a tunnel, and you put sorbet in and you preserve the cuttings so that you can seal it back together and pop it in the freezer. And when you serve this beautiful cake, you slice it and reveal the tube of sorbet inside the cake.
Well, and what's incredible is on the outside, it just looks like a sprinkle firework. It's red, white, and blue sprinkles through, well, actually just red and blue, and the white is the cake. And it is just like it really does like look like you're about to eat a firework.
Yeah, it's perfect for celebrating the holiday or any day in the summer when you just want sorbet and a beautiful pound cake.
Including Bastille Day, because it does have the colors of the French flag.
Yes, it's perfect. So jumping off that conversation with David and the perfect scoop, I can't help but bake that this weekend. What about you?
So the honeysuckles are out in Alabama, at least. And I, last year, cut the blossoms, and you pour boiling water over the fresh blossoms, and then you steep that, and it basically becomes this honeysuckle water. And you can take that and make honeysuckle syrup and jelly, which I apologize to the listeners. You have to taste it to believe this amazing floral but sweet taste. And you can put that syrup in cocktails, in champagne, over ice cream, over milk bread, whatever you want. And then the jelly itself is just, I mean, you can just eat it by the spoonful. And I highly recommend for a home project. It's not hard. It's a fun thing to do.
Well, I'll promise you this. I will bring you a slice of the frozen sorbet bundt cake if you will bring some of that syrup to me. That sounds amazing.
It's a deal.
Okay.
I can work that out.
A baker's agreement. I like it. I like what we've done here.
Well, thank you for listening. We greatly appreciate you tuning in, and we hope to hear from you in, you know, comments on the podcast page. Please just let us know what you would like to hear from us.
Absolutely. And we could not do our podcast without the support of amazing partners like Red Star Yeast. And we love using their products in our test kitchen. I believe in everything they have. I've never had bad results. So thanks to their amazing support, we can bring the Crumb to you. But thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of our baking community. And as always, we wish you happy baking.
Happy baking. If you liked our podcast, please rate, subscribe, and tell a friend about us. To keep up with all of our baking endeavors, follow our editor-in-chief and co-host, Brian, on Instagram at Brian Hart Hoffman. You can follow Bake From Scratch on Instagram at The Bake Feed. For online recipes and fresh baking content, go to our website, bakefromscratch.com, and sign up for our newsletter, Preheat. Finally, for in-real-life baking inspiration, grab our magazine on newsstands or subscribe through our website.